Chapter 32. Rouge. Rouge jerked in Mott's tight grip, trying to twist free so she wasn't dangling in the air above the battlements like a child's rag doll. Mott.
Dad.
Let me go. Aspen needs me. Instead of releasing her, Mott folded her into an uncomfortably metallic embrace.
Think, Rouge, his deep voice rumbled.
What do we need to do? Rouge sucked in a breath, closing her eyes so she couldn't see Silas' vanishing shape or the lights flashing from the big tent. They had known that something would break eventually. Of course they had made a plan, though it had been a hopeless one. Now it wasn't quite, and she might have thrown it all away with her impetuousness.
Okay. I'll let Sarave and the others know. You log out and send the message.
Both A and B lists, okay? It's all or nothing now. The A list consisted primarily of their friends and allies within Refuge. The B list, however, included absolutely everyone Group A could think of, including Jackie. They had initially expected to be facing Akuji's incursion within Refuge, and would only have notified Group A once A was done, they would contact everyone left. Now, however, all bets were off.
Mott nodded.
Right, Codswallop?
You have a battle mount.
Use him. Even through the featureless helm, Rouge could feel Mott's compelling gaze. She flicked another glance over the parapet and nodded jerkily.
Will do.
Mott's grip loosened as he logged out, and she imagined her dad pushing open the lid of his own pod, grabbing his screen, and beginning to type. This would be so much faster if he'd just get an implant, she muttered, but she was already leaping from the edge of the walkway. She crouched as she landed, glancing back up at the 25-foot drop. It's good to be a superhero. She leapt onto her eagerly waiting battle ostrich and raced toward Aspen's tower. As she rode, she yelled at anyone she saw.
Aspen is alive.
Get the non-combatants below.
Code red.
People looked up, their faces suddenly alight with hope. Parents grabbed small children and ran for their homes and the relative safety of the tunnel system. Soldiers looked grim and checked their weapons in their sheaths. There were only 53 men and women in Refuge's military force, but they were all former soldiers, and they would be fighting not for a distant ruler, but for their own families and freedom. At Aspen's tower, Rouge shouted up to the sentry above.
Aspen is alive.
He did it.
We have to attack now.
Sarave's head popped out over the porch railing.
He's alive.
The goblin woman looked disbelieving, but her voice held tremulous hope.
I heard him myself.
He said Akuji is vulnerable, and we need to attack now.
I'm calling Code Red.
Auntie Lig peered out beside her niece, her wrinkled old face wreathed in the most ferocious grin Rouge had ever seen. Every single one of what looked like 100 teeth was exposed, threatening to split her face in half, and they suddenly seemed much sharper than Rouge remembered.
I'll light the flares, the ancient goblin lady called gleefully.
Her balding head pulled back, and was replaced an instant later by a handful of very large red rockets. She touched the bundled wicks with a finger, and a spark visible to Rouge several stories below arced from finger to wick. More sparks sizzled, and then the sticks on which the rockets were mounted shot away, whistling like a football referee who just saw an entire team pile on a downed player. Rouge looked up and saw the flares bursting furiously, shedding brilliant light into the falling darkness.
Aspen! Can you hear me?
We're coming.
Not surprisingly, there was no reply, since she was undoubtedly out of range of party chat. Still, she bit her lip in concern and clucked to Codswallop, turning his head back toward the way they'd come. Her first job was done now, so it was time to kill some monsters. She leaned forward and tapped her heels on Codswallop's sides. The ostrich leapt forward, bugling as he ran with long, powerful pushes of his muscular legs. As soon as he saw a fence, he jumped to it, then to a one-story house, and then they were on the wall, jumping from one section of the battlements to the next. Soldiers shouted from their positions, some encouraging, others just startled. The large tent wove into view, or at least what was left of it did. The poles supporting it must have been knocked over by whatever was going on inside, because bulging shapes struggled inside a solid canvas bag. As she grew nearer, she saw great gaps appear in the fabric, and monsters out of her nightmares began to emerge. They were hideous.
Fleshy masses glinted wetly in the light of the moons, while bones jutted out haphazardly. They lurched and swayed, their misshapen legs unwieldy and heavy, but their sheer mass and apparent inability to feel pain allowed them to roll over friend and foe alike. Rouge saw one that was missing most of its arm simply walk over a player who had been too busy dancing in his underwear to notice that there was a war on. The player died instantly and messily, and his remains were pulled into the behemoth, which used the fodder to regrow its arm. "That's so gross," Rouge muttered and looked around the rest of the field. What players still remained in the encampment outside refuge were emerging from tents and around cookfires. There was a visible wave of weapons and armor being donned over the inappropriately festive gear many of them had been wearing. "Aspen! Silas!" she asked, peering over the gathering horde of cultists, players, and monsters. "Any time, Rouge," Aspen's rough voice came back. He sounded weak, and Rouge felt a chill run down her back. "Have you seen Silas?" Rouge asked, but there was no answer from man or bat. Rouge took one last look, carefully selecting her point of entry. She needed to do as much damage coming in as she could, preferably to players. They would be the greatest threat, and taking them out early would significantly decrease the enemy force. Bonus, most of them would be vulnerable to her poison, unlike the undead creatures. Her eye was caught by a small figure darting out into the open from the last concealing hunk of the fallen tent. Vines grew up in the fleeing person's wake, tangling the bone golem's shambling feet. Why were they called bone golems anyway? They were way too squishy for that. She shook her head, realizing that her brain was trying to find ways to put off the inevitable. Because the fact was, she was probably about to die. There were thousands of enemies below, and only one of her. Codswallop chirruped inquiringly, peering at his rider with one big brown eye. Rouge chuckled hoarsely and patted his shoulder. "You're right, Wally. I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country and all that. I mean, actually, I have a lot more than one, but just one today." She managed a shaky grin, and then she clutched at Wally's feathers. "Jump, Wally!" Her brave bird jumped. First they soared up, and briefly Rouge felt as though her flightless bird had truly learned to fly. Then they reached the peak of their arcing leap, and Rouge stood in her stirrups, staring down at the scurrying shapes below. She had been practicing her skills and spells with the guards during training, and while they hadn't increased a lot, she had finally managed to bump a few up to the next tier. Poof! The cloud of smoke formed below her, obscuring her to the sight of those on the ground, but close enough that the fog would still be potentially deadly to anyone who inhaled it by the time it settled to the earth. It was level 20, and not only was it larger, but it had gained another potential debuff. Now, not only could it blind or poison someone, it was acidic, and would eat away at their weapons, armor, and flesh. Poison Rain was now level 5, and she had opted to increase the duration of the spell. It was only 5 feet wide, but the blades flew out in all directions, and from this height, she could strike someone several meters away. It lasted 6 seconds, with 25 projectiles per second, resulting in 150 sharp poisonous objects flying out at high speed. She entered stealth as she dropped through her cloud, grateful that she wasn't vulnerable to its effects, though her allies were. There were no allies nearby, however, so let the blades fly free. As soon as she passed all the way through, poof, her gaze focused on the player she had selected as her first direct target. He was a big guy, probably a tank of some kind, but he could probably deal some serious damage per second with the broadsword he gripped in both hands. Most importantly, his armor was top tier, with the shimmer of enchantment around the matched set of glossy gold and red enameled gear. Slipping her feet from the stirrups, Rouge dropped loose from Codswallop's saddle. She triggered Shadow Glide, shifting in the darkness so that the full force of her blow would land perfectly on target. With a thought, she tripped Tarion Puncture, and her Mombele swung with deadly accuracy, crunching into the side of her target's skull. All around, blades began to impact unseen targets, and cries of pain and shock nearly drowned out the roar of her victim. Rouge gritted her teeth and yanked the Mombele viciously from where it was lodged, and the man beneath her went abruptly silent and began to totter. A notification popped out from amongst the flood of damage dealt messages scrolling by on the edge of her vision. "You have dealt a fatal blow to Player Dibbler. Player Dibbler has died." Rouge cheered and used Dibbler's falling body as a platform, leaping back toward Codswallop, who was using the two wicked talons on each of his large feet to shred the people around him. When he saw her coming, her battle ostrich turned, striking out to kick a player who was aiming a bow at Rouge, and Rouge dropped onto his back. She swung her mombele and whooped, hoping she looked at least a little bit intimidating. "I'm back." She heard Mott's voice just before the earth shook as the 7-foot-tall armored colossus landed beside her. He swung his double-bladed axe through the air, lopping two low-level players off at the knees before they could backpedal at Mott's sudden appearance. "Where's Aspen?" Rouge and Mott began laying into the foes all around them. Above, the city's defenders began sending volley after volley of arrows down into the crowd. The guards would be vulnerable to attack for 3 seconds after each shot, giving the players a fair chance to damage them in return, but as long as they ducked down behind the battlements, they should stay safe, while still providing cover fire for those outside. "I don't know." Aspen sounded more than a little testy, but definitely alive. "Akuji has his damned bone golems on my tail, and they're chasing me around like a mouse. Fortunately, they're slow and stupid, so far they're doing more damage to the camp than to me. But I can't reach Akuji, and I don't know where Silas is." This last phrase was tight and despairing, and Rouge nearly pulled up the party list, even though she knew it was a truly terrible idea to divide her attention while literally dozens of people were trying to kill her. "I haven't gotten a notification that she died or took more than 50% damage," Rouge finally managed, calling her mombele back to her through a pack of mid-ranked thief types. They yelped as the weapon dealt them superficial damage on the way by, and one unlucky girl was forced out of stealth as she was going for a backstab on Mott. "I'll look for her," Wikiwee offered, leaping from the wall behind them. "I have a skill that lets me locate my allies on the map." Rouge had finally invited all of her friends into the party, deciding that communication was more important than keeping the secret that she could party with some NPCs. "Thank you," Aspen and Rouge said at once, and Rouge saw Wikiwee's hugely magnified brown eyes crinkle in amusement behind her thick goggles. "Hey Aspen, good to have you back," Lyric sent. He and Flu Flu both mounted on their horses, followed Wikiwee off the wall. "Dang it," Lyric muttered. "That's a long drop. Harp lost a damage point." Flu Flu knocked and released arrow after arrow as her red hornbill, Rufus, dove down, dealing a powerful blow to a cultist with his huge beak. "Thou hast not spent enough time with your valiant steed, my love. You must develop the bond of trust, and he will be there for you in your moments of greatest trial." Translation: spend some more time at the stables training with your mount and it'll rank up its endurance. A dozen shadowy figures flowed into the fray. The Justat had come out to play. Rouge and Mott had protested vehemently, reminding the natives that if they died, they were dead forever, unlike the travelers. Rouge wanted all the city's local defenders to stay inside, but the Justat had simply glared at her with their savage yellow gaze, and she'd known further argument was pointless. She was grateful now, however, as weaker players and cultists alike fell like cut wheat before the highly trained assassins. A flash of light that cut like razor blades flashed across the battlefield as Doombloom entered the fray. Her burnished silver armor gleamed, and her whirling blade mowed down nearly as many people as the rest of the players put together. "Where are we going, Rouge?" her sister asked, gracefully sending an arc of wind through an advancing group of players. A shower of blood followed just behind the strike, and two of the players were simply dismembered. "Aspen said Akuji is vulnerable. We need to find him." They looked around. They were utterly surrounded. Mott was using all of his tanking skills to hold the space around them, but they were so outnumbered that they couldn't even see past the layers and layers of attackers. "He's here," Silas' uncharacteristically serious voice spoke into their minds. "He's under some kind of illusion, but I found him with my sonar. He's heading south, trying to escape,